Welcome to Chip Chat, an interview series that connects you with technology experts around the issues the industry is focused on today. And now your host, Allison Klein.
Welcome back to Chip Chat Live from wonderful Seattle, Washington. We're at Supercomputing 2011.
And I've got Deborah Goldfarb with us. And Deborah is the HPC Strategy Director at Intel.
Great to be here. Thanks, Allison.
So, Deborah, you have a very long history in the supercomputing industry in a variety of functions. Do you just want to introduce to the audience a little bit about your background and what brought you to Intel into this new role?
Yes, thanks. So I'm close to about somewhere between 25 and 30 years in the high-performance or supercomputing industry. Started out at IDC and had a phenomenally wonderful experience there for about 17 years. I launched their high-performance computing business, launched the HPC User Forum, which brought together users and vendors and policymakers, and had a myriad, tons of opportunities across in policy and industry to do some really creative things. From there, I went to IBM, and I ran strategy for deep computing, and that was, we were able to launch BlueJeans during that time.
Mm-hmm.
Great experience. And then I went off to a very tiny company to help expand HPC Wire and bring out, added a research component, and again, always touching this high-performance community. I've been very passionate about really trying to drive awareness and use models of high-performance computing across myriad, and which led me to Microsoft, which was this notion of how do you take the Microsoft franchise and flip it so that it touches and it becomes an enabling platform for users who have not used high-performance computing before. Lots of people use Microsoft products, and so how do you use it as a cockpit? And now I am lucky enough and thrilled to be here at Intel to really begin to take that forward and drive the awareness and use models out very broadly in industry, government, academia, for those who currently use and do not use high-performance computing. So I am absolutely thrilled to be here.
We were having an interesting conversation before the episode about the concept of supercomputing in society and the fact that, you know, some of us look at it as some tech dweebs in a lab somewhere doing some esoteric analysis that may lead to discoveries that will impact our world in the future. But the impact is quite larger. Do you want to just describe your perspective on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. We all like to put things in boxes. We like to categorize things in ways that give us some kind of control of the way the world exists. And so we've always looked at supercomputing as this very niche, very kind of iconoclastic world of super scientists and national labs making bombs, and that exists. And I'm glad it exists because those folks drive amazing discoveries in all sorts of extraordinary ways, and we embrace that. But supercomputing and high-performance computing is an extremely broad, extremely broad market that this technology touches and enables so many things. So about 20 years ago, I wrote the preface for a book, and it was the notion was I wanted people to begin to really contemplate how much impact high-performance computing has on the daily lives of everyone around us. And so I said, let's go just live through a day of my life. I get up and I have breakfast. Well, a lot of the food that we eat has been brought to the table by virtue of supercomputers, either through modeling of plant genomes or in the production of food. So you're sitting and eating, and that's been impacted. You get in your car, and your car has been designed by using supercomputers. People don't typically drive and crash cars into walls anymore. You model and simulate all sorts of aspects of cars, and that's why they're much safer. They have much more functionality. All the new material science around lightweight fuel efficiency is all because of the use of high-performance computing, simulating and modeling those attributes. You go and you fill up at the tank. Oil is now all oil is found both in the upstream and downstream aspects by using supercomputers on the modeling of the efficiencies in the downstream side and on the discovery seismic processing and reservoir analysis on the upstream side. And the day goes on. You pick up your prescription at the drugstore. So the point of it is you can go on and on and on and look at everything around, including checking the weather, on all the things that are influenced and impacted by the use of modeling. And so we forget because it's in our blind spot, if you will. It's not in front of us, but there are people doing extraordinary work every day using this technology, changing the lives of everyone on this planet. So I think we need to kind of change language and expand our perspective on how important and critical this technology and capability is.
Well, you've entered the Intel stream at a very interesting time in terms of computing innovation, enterprise computing innovation, and the role of supercomputing in addressing problems that we're facing in society. You know, we were talking yesterday in a podcast about the broader economic crisis going on around the world, the challenges that companies are facing, and it sounds like supercomputing is really meant to come out of the box at this point. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that is?
I do. So, again, back to that metaphor, you know, we are facing extraordinary challenges as a global society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything from economic collapse globally and how do we begin to tether these markets back into control. If we have food crisis, we have water crisis, we have refugee crisis, you name it. There are things beginning to hit these extraordinary levels at sort of a challenge point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as a society, we need to look at the tools we have to begin to address these challenges. We have, how do you create a more productive workforce? How do you put people back to work? How do you make products in a more efficient fashion? How do these small nations really compete on a global scale? What tools can you bring to the table to help that? And I fundamentally believe that simulation and modeling are one of those tools. It's not the only tool.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of tools in the tool
right.
chest. But if you're a small manufacturer, if you're a small nation that's trying to control runaway currency, how do you get better insight into what's causing those dynamics?
Right.
How do you, if you're a small manufacturer, how do you compete on a global scale? What can you do to change the outcomes of your company?
Mm-hmm.
And high-performance computing or modeling, how do you begin? I'll give you a very concrete example on the manufacturing front, because there's been a lot of discussion about how do we reinvent manufacturing.
Right.
Maybe you're a small company and you make widgets. You fit somewhere in some supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
And you're out-competed every day by lower-cost manufacturers around the world, let's say you're in the United States. What can you do about that? Well, there's been extraordinary transitions from these companies that have taken the leap forward on adopting modeling. So let's take that. What that might look like. You are able to understand the parameters of that widget.
Mm-hmm.
Might doesn't sound very sexy, but if you can make a widget for half the price with less callbacks in terms of the manufacturing of that widget because it's more efficiently made, and you can then compete in the global market with a less, you know, more cost-effective, higher quality product and a quicker turnaround time, you're going to be more efficient and more effective in the marketplace. Maybe it allows you to move into adjacent markets because now you have a tool in your tool belt that allows you to try different things, experiment with very, very fast prototyping. So these tools, modeling tools, are not just for people who have, you know, rocket science degrees. They're people who just want to be more competitive in the marketplace. So it's this opportunity to use this technology to tackle some of the world's most challenging problems is right there in front of us, and it's, you know, extraordinary.
So when you look at it, you know, you described some scenarios, you know, filling up your tank with gas. It's a large oil company. You know, driving my Mini Cooper in the morning. That's, you know, a large car manufacturer. All these different things are large company. And you know, in the first blush of looking at them, when you look at the global economic opportunity here or the challenge, whichever mm-hmm. way you want to look at it, glass half empty or full, how do we utilize computing and what kind of changes need to happen from the computing industry to be able to deliver access to those companies that may not have dedicated IT staff to make these solutions possible?
Great question, Allison. So, there's a couple ways to answer this question, and I've spent, you know, the broad part of my career, how do you make these transitions happen? How do you enable people who don't have the skills or the infrastructure or the resources to really access
mm-hmm.
this technology? How do you bring them forward? If you think about computing, there's a continuum.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a continuum from everything from people who don't use computers at all, and
right.
I know many of those people, they're kind of
mm-hmm.
off the grid,
mm-hmm.
To people who are using the most sophisticated technology out there. And I feel that certainly Intel, through the work we're doing in the Alliance for High-Performance Digital Manufacturing, and there's a whole broad range of activity going on about how do you uncover these, how do you break through these obstacles
mm-hmm.
on moving people across this continuum to enable them to have access. I mean, there's knowledge, there's education, there's certification, there's access to resources, there's training and mentoring. There's all sorts of things that we need to infuse in the system. I mean, this notion of it takes a village, it does
right.
take a village.
Right.
And at Intel, we feel that we can play an extremely critical role both in terms of pulling together this ecosystem of this
mm-hmm.
village, if you will, to enable this transition across this continuum. We think we can play a pivotal role with our partners and enable a broader swath of people, a range of people, to
mm-hmm.
really move through this continuum to leverage these tools. But it's not easy.
Right.
And if it was easy, it would be done,
right? Right.
And but the goal is to really democratize, if you will, this technology broadly so that people have access.
So I'm going to ask you a few questions.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the solutions of tomorrow
mm-hmm.
and you imagine a world where we have delivered this capability to a much broader, rich group of companies utilizing supercomputing resources more fully, because
mm-hmm.
as I believe you said before, some of them are using them today but could use them more. Some of them are not using them at all. Some of them are using them quite extensively but might not be looking at all of the different opportunities to apply them. So when you look at from a pure performance perspective, what are the key attributes in systems architecture and the way we build supercomputers in the future that are going to make this type of capability available to a wider array of customers?
So this is a really great question, and I believe, fundamentally, this is a Deborah Goldfarb thought, but it has been instantiated by others who I've spoken to many, many, many.
Copyright Deborah Goldfarb.
Copyright Deborah Goldfarb. Look, every breakthrough in computing, every breakthrough in technology all up has been because of the user interface,
uh-huh.
where you have made the gap between sort of this experience, sort of the touch points, the experience, how you embrace technology has been because
mm-hmm.
we've reduced the complexity of the interface.
Right.
And I think that the more you can obscure the complexity of whatever given architecture it is, the more use model, the broader the use model there's going to be. I mean, one of the opportunities that we have is to transform. Let's paint the new picture of how we want accessibility to be,
mm-hmm.
starting from living the day in the life of an engineer or a scientist or an economist who wants to solve a question, a problem. I have a problem. I don't know
mm-hmm.
how to get there. I know
right.
it's a complex problem. So what? How do they want to touch that technology? What does that look like? Is it through some sort of a portal that obscures all the complexity at the application level? Does it collect to a cloud? Does it connect to an on-premise server that's, again, obscured? It's that experience point. So to me, a lot of the innovation, I know that from an Intel standpoint, we're a chip company.
Right.
I get that. But when I really look at the opportunity and where Intel is evolving its thinking, it's about moving to understand the complexities of how users really access
sure,
that technology.
Sure, absolutely.
And it's our challenge going forward is defining that new experience point in the high-performance computing and simulation and modeling space, how people will see and experience and leverage that technology without having to have the skill base that exists for
mm-hmm.
the very unique high-end folks.
Well, and I've got a number of different questions to ask you on that topic, but I think we have time for one more before break. And for those who are listening online live, please send your questions at Intel Chip Chat on Twitter or to our chat pane on the Blog Talk Radio website. You mentioned user experience and the need for really specific implementations today for some of these high-end implementations. What are we doing to make sure that we're improving that user window so that those who are not dedicating their entire lives to running supercomputers can actually utilize supercomputing technology in their business?
Well, I think we're doing a lot of things, actually. I mean, starting from the fact that, I'm not sure if this is where you were going, but I'm a newbie here at Intel, and one of the things that has been extraordinary is you've brought in people like Genevieve Bell,
mm-hmm.
who is thinking deeply about the anthropological user experience aspects of
mm-hmm.
computing all up. And we intend to work really closely with her on the high-end side and how do you pervasively address these usability aspects. So there's that aspect. So from
mm-hmm.
an Intel standpoint, we're getting really smart about what questions we need to ask and what kinds of experience points we need to leverage. But going forward, we're trying to do things in programming models, in the service layers, in the software tooling that make, the usability of these increasingly more complex architectures. I mean, you look at the core counts and things. I mean, you can become numb in terms of, oh, my goodness, how do I leverage that? So how do we keep moving up the stack and obscuring that complexity so that our partners and our ecosystem partners, the ISVs, can build much more, user-friendly environments that we can leverage and build applications on top of and create these, very simplified interfaces.
Sure. Well, thank you so much. We're going to go to break right now. I've got a number of different questions lined up for you for our second half. And for those listening in the audience, please send your questions in.
We'll be right back with more of Allison's interview. Have a question? Visit us at twitter.com/IntelChipChat. We'll be answering questions live next.
Washington at Supercomputing. I've got Deborah Goldfarb with us. And Deborah is the HPC Strategy Director at Intel, new to the job, 7 weeks in. So we're throwing her into the line of fire today with a live interview. Deborah, interesting conversation so far about the transition of supercomputing, really taking in perspective where it is today, much broader than maybe some people give it credit for, and where it's going and the importance this brings to some of the massive challenges that the world is facing. You were just talking about what we're doing to make the interface better and give more access because, and I agree with you, as the interface becomes more natural, the opportunity becomes greater because people feel comfortable with it. When you look at applications, you had talked about the fine-tuning of applications required in some high-end, high-performance computing solutions. How do we get to a model where we're developing applications that can be used across companies and industries in an effective manner? And is there a lot of engagement here in the industry ecosystem today?
So you asked a couple of questions, and all really good questions. So one of the interesting things about the high-performance computing industry all up is that and it's one of the challenges, is that it's an extremely, it's like a cottage industry. Mm-hmm. You have very specialized applications that deal with elements of what's going on. If you're building a car, you have structures, you have fluids, you have material science, you have all these different application domains that are dealing with all sorts of attributes of physics, right? Different aspects of the physics of an automobile or the physics of an airplane wing. And the economics that drive that ISV model are complex because your total available market is relatively small.
Sure.
And so how do you build a business model that enables you to be best of breed in that niche, interoperate with all the other, applications within that stack, but also drive it out broadly as you can to kind of so you can sustain yourself? And it's extremely complex.
Sure.
I think one of the things that's happening in the ISV space in high-end computing in general or in science engineering all up is that you're seeing this aggregation, these consolidations of applications that create these modules that span, which is helping create a better economic model. But I think the bigger Uber question is how do these ISVs and how does Intel play a role in enabling these ISVs to reach a broader market so that the economics become, the economics shift and you have more pervasive reach. And so there's, back to our earlier discussion, how can the ISVs begin to reduce the complexity in their application? And that's not only the interface and what I call lightweight applications that are accessible maybe through a portal or some sort of a handheld device that may connect to either on-prem or the cloud. How do you create these think of the iStore. How do you create this plethora of applications that people can access in an easy way? The economic model shifts, and you create a much richer ecosystem of opportunity for these ISVs. Mm-hmm. I think Intel can play a huge role through our development tools, to having a consistent platform. We have, within the Intel family of high-end computing, I'm not sure if you were going here, but I just want to make a reference point, is we have Intel Cluster Ready, which creates uniform standards so that applications can port to, and that helps drive interoperability and connectivity in this application level layer. But I do believe that it's through providing the tools to have a much more pervasive reach and creating these lighter weight applications for the ISV, the ISV ecosystem, that's going to really kind of broaden the reach.
When you look at when you look, you're the first guest that I've had on in a long time that's trying to guess where I'm going, which is kind of fun.
It is complicated. I'm drinking from a fire hose right now on all levels. So those of you on the phone or wherever are listening, you know, please hang in there.
When you look at the App Store concept, and you look at where we are today, do you see any champions rising up, you know, Intel, others, to help make this happen? And is this going to become a cloud service model where we have vast HPC implementations that are shared across companies, or is this really going to be more off-the-shelf deployments of local small clusters?
All of the above.
Okay.
I think it's really early to predict what the future state will be in terms of infrastructure access. And I think depending upon what segment you're in, there are all sorts of challenges. I mean, some of these industries that where high-performance computing plays a significant role all up, whether you're small companies, large companies, are highly regulated.
Mm-hmm.
There's issues with data movement across geographies. If you're in the petroleum business, you can't take your data and move it to another country. It's illegal.
Right.
In healthcare, which is a huge space for the impact of high-performance computing in every dimension from discovery all the way through healthcare delivery, there are all sorts of regulatory and compliance issues that you have to contend with. So I think the cloud model, let's just start there, is extremely interesting on some dimensions because the economics of access, you talk about flattening of the world. I mean, my goodness, you have small companies who can leverage resources in the cloud that suddenly look big. So you have to look at that as one dimension of where we're going, but it will not service all dimensions.
Right.
So I think we are on an interesting evolutionary path where people are going to experiment with lots of new ways of leveraging these different kinds of resources from on-desk to on-prem to cloud to software as a service to infrastructure as a service, and the next 5 years are going to be amazingly fun. Now, who's going to play a role in that? I think lots of companies are going to play a role in that. I think Intel has, it's just a really extraordinarily cool company, and I keep feeling like I'm a kid in a candy store. We have talent, we have vision, we have a lot of tremendous relationships with our ecosystem partners that we can pull together the best of breed to really bring this into the market in a compelling way. So I am amazingly optimistic that the next 5 years we're going to see a spectrum of computing topologies that will emerge to provide resources to a very broad range of users.
And when you were describing that, one thing that came into my mind, we did an interview a few weeks ago with one of the scientists at Berkeley Labs who's doing genome research, and he was talking about the challenges of just physically moving data from data center to data center, a physical challenge for a cloud model. One question that I have when you're talking about the full gamut of opportunities, is it the technology capabilities that will drive the choice? Is it economics? Is it sociological? Or is it a combination of all
of the above? All of the above. I mean, so there are clear technical issues that need to be resolved in terms of latency and, you know, keep on that example of genomics. You know, if you're doing sequencing here, do you move the data? You know, if you're doing the front end stuff, do you move the data to the cloud? Do you have all this latency in between, or do you keep the data hosted in the cloud and you run your models there? I mean, I think people are exploring and experimenting with all sorts of how you move through these technical challenges. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are, you know. Coming from an Intel perspective, we all want to believe that the technical issues are the hurdles.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, they're human issues.
Right.
Do you feel comfortable? Do you feel secure? I mean, you talk to somebody, you get to use the cloud for your workload. Oh, the cloud is insecure. Let me tell you something. People hack into individual data centers every single day. I was chatting.
Deborah, we're not supposed to talk.
No, it's the truth. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, people are, this notion of security is, you know, and again, I mean, I think this is one of the places where Intel, with, you know, with the most recent acquisition, has an unbelievable opportunity to redefine what security means across all these platforms, from client to cluster to cloud. Unbelievable. And if I were going to put, you know, my bet somewhere, I think that we're going to be on the front end, really, as thought leaders in really driving a completely new paradigm around the security issue. But more importantly, it's the perception of humans in the marketplace about where they, how they think about computing, how they feel secure, how they feel, you know, what the right accessibility models. And It just everything comes full circle to that human interface, that human experience of how, what are the pivots, what are the trigger points that make people feel comfortable with what they're doing.
You know, it's interesting, and we'll end here, I think, with, you mentioned Genevieve Bell in the earlier part of the episode, and we had a conversation with her on Chip Chat a few months ago about the concept of feeling secure and what makes people feel that security with the way they interact with their technology. And, you know, when you were describing these things, it really hit a button for me in terms of looking at, you know, the cloud security or even just interconnect choice or, you know, what is reliable, what is secure. And it seems like with the economic challenges that we're facing, some of these models that may not actually be proven true but are perceptions about what is more secure, what is better, need to be challenged a little bit more aggressively simply because companies are looking for economic advantage and they're not going to get it from higher profit margins. They're going to get it from lower cost ratios.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we, you know, as a society, we go through these transitions all the time, and we're the first to jump out there and say we're the naysayers.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly they say there's things that these critical pivot points that you realize, oh my gosh, I really have no choice.
Mm-hmm.
I really have to think about this. And once you're faced with the realities, the economic realities, the sociological realities, whatever it is, you say, let me rethink the model. You know? And once you begin to kind of turn it upside down, you may evaluate things in different contexts. Look, we're going to get there in terms of security. I have no doubt. We're going to get there in terms of, you know, those are the, in my opinion, the easier things to deal with.
Right.
It's, and there will be, and people will kind of ride that way, but there's no question that the efficiencies and accessibility and the emerging models of cloud-based computing will become extremely important foundational paradigm going forward. There's no doubt. People just have to sort of emotionally and mentally make that transition in their heads.
And then the interesting thing, you know, we've been doing interviews at the Intel Developer Forum, Oracle World, now at Supercomputing. What strikes me is that the culmination of all of these different segments into a new world of enterprise computing where segments are really bleeding into one another. The same challenges with mission-critical data analysis and cloud service delivery and insight driven by modeling engines. Seems like we're all coming into one intersect point.
We are. And, it's funny because maybe 20 years ago I did this, when I was at IDC, I did a speech, and it was about big data. This was like 20 years ago. And
you're really ahead of your time.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, that were kind of crazy. And there were all these people in the audience like, what is she rambling on about? And I was like, it's all going to be about the data that, you know, the minute you start thinking about, you know, how do I solve this or how do I ask this or how do I get insight into, it's all about whether you're in supercomputing or you're in consumer apps or you're whatever, you know, it's the fundamental same problem is how do you get insight into a challenge, into a problem, into a question.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the more we sort of circling back to the first comment I made about getting out of the box,
right,
the more we bleed out of the definitions that we're so comfortable in and we start thinking about how do we apply tools to answer small, big, gigantic, enormous questions, right,
mm-hmm,
to transition forward as a society, the better we're going to be.
Sure, absolutely.
And that's really what we have to, you know, that's really the kind of mental model we have to embrace. And, again, thinking about Intel, I think we're the company that's going to make it happen.
Well, awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the program.
Great
to be here.
It was
a delightful interview. We'll have you back very soon to
see. Thank you so much.
How you're doing with breaking us out of that box. And welcome to Intel.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.